In this episode, I talk with Bridget Pack about how she navigates a life with a spouse that's transgendered.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.
Hello, my friends. Welcome back to Leading LDS, the podcast. I'm your host, Kurt Frankum. And as a reminder, this is the third part of a three-part interview, really, that we've had. And I'm sure there'll be a fourth and a fifth and a sixth part in the future that have yet to be recorded. But if you're listening to this and find it interesting, would like to go back to the other parts, I encourage you to go to leadinglds.com and find those parts where we talk with members from North Star International and discuss same-sex attraction, being a gay Mormon, and how leaders can assist and love those so they feel welcome to come worship with other members of the church. And this specific episode is, I talk with Bridget Pack, and wonderful sister. Again, it's a continuation from our last discussion, so you will hear Greg Harris and Joseph Stith in the conversation as well. And they give great perspectives as we talk about what it's like to be a transgendered Mormon and how a ward has gone through the steps. Not that they figured it out by any means, but they've gone through the steps to find a place for Bridget's spouse where he or she can come worship and be a part of that. Really fantastic interview. So we're going to jump in mid-conversation because it's just a continuation from the last conversation. It is, but a great story and perspective from Bridget Pack. Well, the last time we did this interview, Ty Mansfield was with us, and he's done a lot of research. I think he's even on the graduate school doctorate level with an emphasis on gender identity, right? And I remember asking him to sort of go down that path, and he kind of said, well, that's a whole different podcast. And I thought, oh, okay. And so that whole different podcast is probably starting right now. The beauty about podcasts is that, you know, we're not constrained by, you know, commercials or radio station schedules. And so we can make this podcast as long as we want. And if somebody just can't listen, they can hit pause and come back to it later. So not to make this episode really long, but we're just getting started, to say the least. So, but which brings us to Bridget's story. You've mentioned a little bit as far as gender identity, and that's sort of your role in this organization. So tell us a bit about your story and how you ended up helping North Star with the transgender. Because, well, let me say the LGBT, this is a term we hear in the media all the time, right? Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, right? Am I getting it right? But the more I've thought about this, as we've just talked before, you know, I can sort of relate to somebody on a superficial level that's experiencing same gender attraction, because I know what it feels like to be overcome with attraction towards another human being. But for me, those are women, and for you, that's men of the same gender. And so I feel like, again, I don't want to say I totally understand. Of course, I don't, but I can relate to those feelings that go inside us for gender identity. Feeling like I'm a completely different gender, or I don't even identify with what my physical body tells me I am, is totally, I mean, even to the point where I even wonder, why do they group transgender with this group, right? And maybe it's just because, well, you're all kind of being outcasts in society, and so you're bonding together. But it really is completely different, right?
It is completely different. And we've really tried hard to help educate this around us, that your gender has absolutely nothing to do with your orientation They are completely separate subjects. So even if you ask somebody and they said, yes, I'm transgender, that doesn't immediately tell you what their orientation is. Or if somebody has the same gender or attraction, it doesn't tell you anything about their true gender. So it's definitely a different dialogue, a different discussion, and something that really hasn't even been started to come to discussion at a church level. I think the most recent time I've even had, or even maybe the only time I've had any member of the general authorities speak directly about gender identity, was last year when they had a trip talk with Elder Oaks and Elder Christofferson, and a question was posed about somebody being transgender and how to love them. And I really love that Elder Oaks said, you know, we've come a long way in trying to understand lesbian and gay members of the church, but we have so much to learn about transgender members of the church. That's an honest answer. I can handle that. He basically acknowledged that we don't know much and we are still trying to find it.
So not that you're experiencing any gender identity, but it's your husband, your spouse. How long have you been married?
Married 16 years.
Okay. And when did this become apparent that this was going to be a subject in your life?
Well, I remember prior to when we got married, we talked about the fact that he really didn't fit the norm of the typical return missionary, had the same life pattern. And he really had some of these gender thoughts that were there. But to me, being so naive and not understanding, and the church was just starting dialogue about, you know, gay and lesbian issues, I really believed that this was his expression of feeling gay. You know, he was ashamed of these feelings, and so that must be what it is. And really believed that once we got married, they would go away. And throughout our marriage, they would come up, it would kind of become a topic, and then we'd hide them away. And a lot of times, you know, we would discuss them. And a lot of times there was years where we didn't really discuss that this was going on. And now looking back, I realized that that was the layers and mounds of shame and guilt that he was carrying around and had been his entire life, feeling something was wrong, feeling he was broken, he didn't fit, he didn't belong. So saying out loud that he felt this way, you know, felt like he should have been a girl. How do you even start that conversation with your immediate spouse, let alone your community and your family and your bishopric? So it was something that we definitely didn't always address. About 7 years ago, we had a situation where we had a really massive issue in our marriage and a really big fight where this came to surface. And I realized I thought things had been going really well and they had really just been not, I didn't know about them. They were being hidden. They were being closeted and he was hiding them from me. And that was the point where we realized that this wasn't going away. We had to talk about it. It wasn't an attraction issue. It wasn't anything I knew what it was, but it definitely wasn't, he wasn't gay. And I remember begging and pleading. In fact, I remember actually embarrassingly enough praying one night to the Lord to make him just gay, because that I felt like people were talking about, but this other stuff they weren't. And that took us to go and seek out counseling again and get some help for this. Additionally, he was convinced that even experiencing any gender confusion meant there was no place in the church that either of us really belonged if we were married. So we were afraid of what it meant, but he decided at that time that he didn't belong. And so he took off his garments, left the church, and had not attended church in many years until we found North Star. So about just under 2 years ago now, it became to the point where, with all the fear of what transgender meant, it meant that we couldn't belong in the church. It meant that no one we knew had stayed in their marriage, and no one we knew was trying to figure this out in the contents of the church. One night, my husband said, I am transgender. I am this way. I love you, but if you can't love me back, I understand. That was a turning point where we realized I made covenants to the Lord to honor my marriage, and that is what I will ultimately be judged by in the Lord's eyes. If I walked away from another child of God for a trial they'd be facing, I just don't imagine that the Lord would be okay with that. So we decided that there had to be someone out there. There had to be someone who understood this, who recognized this, and we weren't finding any resources. So through kind of reaching out to everywhere we could find, which when we found online transgender Mormon groups or support groups, it always was the transgender anti-Mormon or post-Mormon. It was that story of how to cope after you've left. It was never the story of what to do while you believe still. So we were reaching out for resources and someone mentioned North Star and how North Star had done, you know, moved mountains in understanding those that experience same gender attraction, you know, the LGB part of LGBT, and really needed to begin to understand better the T issue and how members of the church could live in harmony with the gospel and still identify as transgender. So we shortly thereafter met with Ty Mansfield and had a meeting where he just had open, frank dialogue about what it must feel to have these feelings. We talked about journeys. We talked about experiences. In many ways, I was blown away at the similarities of somebody who has experienced same gender attraction, feeling shame and guilt, isolation, and feeling like they were set up for a life of doom, gloom, and you know, you're never going to be happy. Those were so shared amongst the transgender community, but there were some very unique experiences and unique things to the transgender community. So North Star has been trying to keep that conversation going, help us understand how we can reach out to our communities and our church leaders, talk to our church leaders. Don't be afraid of our church leaders. They're there for us and to support us. And through that, if you had met me a year ago, I joke about this all the time, but I swore I would never tell anyone my story. We were very, very closeted and no one was going to know about this. And when I met Ty, he said, well, would you ever write an essay about your story and tell your story to the world? And I laughed so hard, I can't even begin to tell you. And I said, absolutely not. And he said, well, North Star has this Voices of Hope project that is putting stories of real life individuals facing some gender attraction, making these stories, you know, they're online, people can find them, they can learn about how normal these people are and how faithful these people are. Their stories of those identify themselves, their spouses, their family. And it's really something that has helped. He said, now we aren't quite sure we have the funding and the audience for that, but let's try just putting out written essays. So we started the Journey of Faith essay project, which is telling of transgender stories within the Mormon church. And Ty Mansfield, as well as Kyle Merkley, have led that project. And so I don't know why still to this day, but I released my story and it was the first step to really healing myself, healing the shame I felt, and not being afraid of who I was and what my marriage was, because it wasn't a bad thing. We were just facing anything that somebody else might face. It just ours was a little different.
Yeah. And so these voices of faith.
It's Voices of Hope is the experiences of those of same gender attraction. And then Journeys of Faith is the stories of transgender members in the church. And it still has, like in the Journeys of Faith essays, we have those identify as transgender and their spouses have started writing stories as well. We would encourage more, but it's sad to say that the majority of the transgender community in the church is very, very closeted and afraid to release their story or name. And there's a lot that just aren't ready to do that yet. But I can tell you they're out there. We hear from people every day. In fact, just recently got contacted by somebody who realized we had a shared connection in this small little world, feeling isolated, and yet had a very, very close personal connection with somebody else identifying exactly as they were. But we're so afraid to talk about it. We didn't know that, and we felt alone.
If I could quote Brené Brown, my hero of all time, author, famous TED Talks, just look Brené Brown. She defines the difference between guilt and shame this way. If guilt is I made a mistake, shame is I am a mistake.
Wow.
And we drive that so deep into our personal being that we can't just share that part of ourselves without the fear of rejection. And the thing that we all share in common, regardless of what we may experience, is a fear of rejection and a need for acceptance. That's what makes us human. And for
belonging.
Too long, say again.
And belonging,
yeah. And that's what North Star represents, is that we're not alone anymore. We're all moving relatively down a similar path on our journeys because we can relate to each other, but we're doing it now in the context of the gospel of Jesus Christ.
And I think in a leadership perspective, I think that's a great perspective to have, because the one mistake if there is one mistake that a leader must not make is don't treat these individuals as if there's something to be fixed, right? Mm-hmm. Because that goes back to the shame that
exactly
that your mistake. Well, we gotta fix this and figure it out so that we can move on down the typical path, right? And going back to your story, Bridget, your husband grew up in a very traditional LDS background, went on a mission. Maybe what was his mission experience like in general with experiencing this?
Well, I'm going to back up just a little bit and say okay. Transgender is a term that encompasses a variety of gender identity things people face. It's not one fits all, one shoes fits all. For some, it's as different as maybe they just have a different gender expression. They don't feel all the time that they feel really masculine, or they don't feel all the time they're very feminine. Some people believe that their gender is completely wrong with their body. Their biological body born is male, but their mind is female. And there is some real conflict that that individual might face. So there's a huge different, experiences of those who identify as transgender. Additionally, there's a variety of ways to cope with those feelings or manage those feelings and the ability to do so. Some people, it is something that if they just feel that their gender isn't quite right, maybe they could be one of my dear friends says that it can be a way that he still can attend church, but he always will have a bright pink or bright blue or, floral top, shirt on, because for him, that's kind of his way of expressing inside that he doesn't fit that typical white shirt and black suit mold. And that is enough that at this time he's coping. Other people, that's not enough. I know for my spouse, that's not enough. And so just be respectful that everybody is kind of at, they might have a different gender identity. They also may even be what's called gender fluid, meaning they sometimes bounce back and forth and don't always fit 100% one way or another, which is still something I'm learning about. But on top of that, they also have a different ability to cope with what they're facing, the dysphoria they're feeling, the, confusion they're feeling why their gender doesn't match. And they also may take different steps of coping. For many members, a simple amount of hormone replacement therapy actually is enough to quiet their mind that they can live the rest of their life in their biologically assigned, gender, even though their mind might not feel right the whole time. That's enough for them. And they are able to live wonderful lives, wonderful marriages, and have families and all of that. Other people, it's not enough. And other people will need some form of outward expression. Like for my spouse, often it will be expressing that feminine side. And that's really healing. And other people, there are some that just, in order to live without facing suicide, feel that they need to live full time in the opposite gender. There's very different experiences there. Also, some identify as transgender, or they know that their gender isn't quite right as a young child. Others, which is really common, it's through puberty when they start really feeling these feelings of their gender not being accurate. And we're getting a lot of questions about, how to handle those children at 12, 13, and they're going into the youth programs, and what do we do? And some even earlier. So it comes at different times, it affects at different times. But for my spouse, it was something that clearly was known as a child and struggled, his entire life to try to figure this out. And it wasn't discussed about, no one knew what it was. No one knew how to handle it. It came off as very much a shame issue. And as he would be encouraged to go and talk to bishopric members throughout, I think he said like four or five different bishops, he talked about this. It was always a shamed thing. There was always something wrong with you. How do we fix this problem? We, even as a married couple, we were sent to pornography addiction classes and sexual addiction classes, thinking that that's what would solve this. And it obviously wasn't the case. It just reinforced shame for us. My spouse was able to hold on long enough to go on a mission, but did not experience any relief on the mission. Actually, it was some of the most turbulent times because he served in London, which was very open lifestyle, very progressive lifestyle. And so this was something he was faced with for the first time. He had never really heard what transgender was. And now he's faced with people who their dress doesn't really match what he thought it should. And it's okay there. And what does this mean? And so his mission was very, very trying. And he came home and it was something that at that time He knew he wasn't normal. He knew in that, in his mind, that everyone was telling him he was broken. He wasn't right. He wasn't as everybody else was. And that devastates me to hear, but I can look back and see countless times in our marriage where that expression came forward. And he felt that he was encouraged to get married and go to the temple and do these things that the church taught. Because at that time, even they were saying with the gay community, if you go and get married, these thoughts might go away. So we did that. We got married and we thought they would go away. And I knew about 2 weeks into our marriage that they didn't go away. Like, it was that soon. It wasn't something that the, you know, thrill of the wedding even took away. It was always there. And at the same time, he was even so afraid to admit it to me that we weren't being honest about the gender there. We weren't even having dialogue about what it meant until just recently. We call it brutal honesty. All of a sudden now, there's nothing we can't talk about. There's nothing that we won't discuss because we finally are being honest about this elephant in the room that before was causing both of us so much heartache and pain. And the most difficult point today is my spouse has come through a very, over the last year, has really begun to heal. However, when you have 35, 38 some odd years of shame and guilt, that's a lot of layers of onion to peel away. And had any of those years not had that shame and guilt, the healing process is significantly improved and it's shortened. And families who are accepting and families who even just are willing to discuss this are going to help that person not have this difficult trial to uncover what is really going on now.
And you mentioned he spent some time out of the church, generally speaking. How long into your marriage did he decide that he just can't attend church and feel normal?
Well, we went for many years and I did what I was told. And it actually wasn't until I went through some years of infertility where I personally was struggling with, in fact, funny enough, maybe with my role fitting into what I thought was the gender norm for the church, which kind of is funny and it adds to this, but I couldn't handle the emotional roller coaster of going to sacrament and more importantly, going to Relief Society every Sunday. It was very, very trying for me. So I stopped going and it made it easy because my husband didn't really want to go. He felt like he should have, but he really had this confusion too. So for about 2 years, we stopped going. And I remember when I had a very heartfelt bishop who came to me and said, how can I get you to come? And I told him, I will come, but I will not step foot into Relief Society at this time to hear women getting pregnant and to talk about how my mission on life was to bear children. And I'm doing everything under the sun and I can't get pregnant. What's wrong? And he said, well, you know, we're always looking for primary leaders. And I said, great. So from then I became a lifelong primary teacher and I was just fine with that. But now I wanted to go to church and I needed to go to church and my spouse wasn't at that place. So it was about 7 years ago when maybe almost eight, when my spouse finally decided that they were done pretending that they belonged, that in their opinion, they didn't belong. And they were ready to admit that out loud. So I remember the day where this all occurred and he completely turned away from the church and wanted nothing to do with it. And there was only a couple times since then, up until a year ago, where he would even step foot in the church building. And one was for my daughter's baptism because she turned eight. And while he wasn't able to perform the ordinances of that day, he was able to pull it together enough just to be there in tears the whole time, but he was there and our fathers each participated in her baptism. And then one other relative's baptism that he attended. But other than that, he wanted nothing to do with the church. It was too triggering. It was too difficult and it was too hard. And our bishop, who was our next behind our house neighbor at the time, always kept in contact, always checked in to see how we were doing. Let us talk to him. In fact, I joked because our sweet bishop would even let my spouse go over there. And one point I even joked, it was almost yelling. Like my spouse had so much built up anger and hurt and just wanted to release these feelings of failure that the bishop took it for probably 2 hours in the backyard. Let my spouse just unleash all of this hurt. And it wasn't unleashing anything wrong with the church. It was actually unleashing how desperately he wanted to be in the church and how he felt he couldn't. And even the bishop will tell you that story, but it was really hard to watch somebody who had the testimony greater than anyone I imagined. He one time broke down in tears about how important the atonement was, and yet he hadn't gone to church in years. And I realized, I've been going to church my whole life. I don't know if I have the testimony of the atonement that this person does in front of me. It was never a matter of testimony. It was, believe it or not, the matter that somebody could believe it, that they were worthy of it. My spouse really, truly, wholeheartedly did not believe he was worthy to be a child of God, that he was worthy of having a place in the church. And that's when I realized this has to change. We can't go forward like this. And the first meeting we had with North Star, to that day, my spouse had not attended a church. Even at primary programs, my spouse couldn't attend. It was too emotionally triggering. So that was the point when all of a sudden in that discussion, my spouse said, they're going to let people be transgender and be Mormon? And I said, well, I don't know. That's what North Star says is possible. They said it's possible if you're gay. It's got to be possible if you're transgender. And it was the first time we started to believe we belonged. Like, we had a place. Maybe it's not the same as everybody else, and we look a little different, and we act a little different, but we can be a member of the church. And that started this very slow journey back for my spouse. And it's still a trial. There's still points where my spouse will say that, you know, wonderful things about the church and how amazing it is, but it applies to me, or it applies to my daughter, and still questioning if it fully applies to them.
Yeah. And I love the, how you tell the story of the role that leader played, because sometimes, and I noticed this is when I served as bishop, that I'd invite people in my bishop's office and I would be clear with them and say, you can say anything here. You can cuss in here if you want. You can yell at me if you want. That's what makes this room so sacred, is that you can just get it out. And I feel like, you know, some bishops may have slammed the door and that would have been the end of the discussion. But sometimes that leader just has to be that sounding board of that hate or anger that's built up and needs to get it out.
Our bishop knew that that couldn't even happen in his office. My spouse wouldn't even step into the church. So he made an agreement. You can meet me on the back patio anytime you want. And if that's where you're comfortable, we'll meet there and we'll talk about this. And, you know, and I chuckle about why us, I ask that a lot, like, why am I experiencing this? And, that same bishop has now recently come to us, and his daughter got married a few years back, and his daughter's, his daughter's husband had a father who later in his life left the family, identified as gay, has left the church, and has completely, you know, moved on with his life as a gay individual, which is their path. But he said he was so much more prepared to have that discussion with his future son-in-law because of our story. And so at the same time, within our ward and within our stake in our community, I think we're having much more in-depth conversations and much more in-depth discussions just because the dialogue has been started and sparked. And I promise it's happening in your ward. I promise it's happening in your stake. I promise it's happening in your community. You just may never know because people are hiding in desperate fear behind closed doors.
And so he's active. And again, maybe this is a good time to address the pronouns. He prefers, his name is Ryan. His birth name is Ryan, but he prefers going by Anne, right?
Yeah.
She prefers going by Anne.
That's correct.
And you're, just like we talked about in the last podcast episode about, you know, what, is it okay to say these people are gay? Are we in some way condoning what they're doing? But your husband feels accepted and feels like that place when she is addressed in the female pronouns. Is that accurate?
Yeah. And I would say for anyone you meet that's transgender and you're unsure of pronouns, first of all, one that's really strange for me is if you haven't even had the chance to ask, they and them are non-gender pronouns. It's really the appropriate way to address anyone if you're unsure of their gender. To me, that's confusing because I was always taught that was plural, but it truly is the preferred way. And then once you get past that, ask somebody, ask them the preferred pronouns that they would like to be, you know, they would like you to use and what name they would like to be referred to by. For my spouse, yes, it's Ryan, who's his biological, or how he was born is his birth name. And I spent the first 15 years of our marriage as Ryan and him. So I really struggle changing that in my head. I'm getting better. So, but he also, my spouse thankfully gives me a pass because I'm still learning and I appreciate that. But my spouse identifies as female and prefers female pronouns and goes by the name as Anne, feels better identifies them. But it's all up in the air. It's very, very confusing. And we're not asking anybody to do that. We're not asking our bishop to recognize my spouse as female, more just let my spouse attend church in the capacity that they emotionally are prepared to attend, because we don't know about the other stuff. Even honestly, as passionate as I am about this subject, my spouse and I have different opinions. I believe that my spouse's spirit gender is male. Maybe that's because I'm afraid to say that there may be another way out there. But for me, it brings comfort to say my spouse's gender and my spouse's spirit is male. But my spouse has a personal testimony that his spouse is female, or his spirit is female. And it's so passionate for the both of us that we just don't talk about it because we don't have that answer right now. We don't have the information. We only know the very little tip of the iceberg as to what people perceive us as. And trust me, that's going to be one of the first questions I ask when I get that opportunity is what, why this and why are we going through this? I just don't know.
So what's his week to week experience like in your ward, and how has the leadership created a place for her?
So when this first kind of came forward, we met with North Star. At that time, my spouse still wasn't attending anything with church. And through that, we met some really wonderful people. And one of them invited us to attend church. And I even remember when my spouse said, "Oh, I wonder if I could attend church dressed as female," that even myself, I thought, "Oh, I don't know. Is that wrong? Like, I don't know what to tell you." I said, "But if you're asking to go to church, I'm not going to tell you no." So I said, "Okay, go." And my spouse did. He attended a singles ward with somebody that doesn't live far from us. And I will never forget the day when my spouse walked back in the door and could not stop bawling his tears about the testimony he had received that day. And that for the first time in his lifetime, she was able to focus on the message that was delivered. Because all of those previous years, there was this internal torment and conflict and dysphoria that was occurring that my spouse couldn't even pay attention to what was being said. So for the fact that my spouse now is excited and really energized and felt the spirit so intensely, I thought, well, maybe I'll let Anne go to church again. Maybe I'm okay with this. And so I still was unsure, but I wasn't ready for it to be in my ward. So I was thinking 6 months, but it may have been as long as almost 9 months. My spouse attended a ward not far from us where another mom who has a transgender son had found her ward to be understanding and trying to figure this out with her. So my spouse attended that ward every single Sunday. And I was noticing that my spouse was coming home and asking to read the scriptures and asking about family meaning and wanting to have prayers, wanting to wake me up in the middle of the night. So when I felt it was middle of the night, to have prayers in the morning before they left for work. That had never occurred in my household. And it was just amazing. It was such a spiritual opportunity to see the excitement come back into our lives. And of course, my daughter to see that, which was the biggest priority for me, that I still don't understand what it means. I still don't know why the Lord would have anyone face this, but I have developed a testimony that the Lord knows we face these trials and that the Lord wants you to come back to Him however you can, whatever you're wearing, whatever you have done in your past, whatever color spiked hair you have or tattoos or whatever, the Lord doesn't care. The Lord just wants you to come back to Him. And so we are figuring that out. When we released our story last June through the Journey of Faith project, we were shocked at the acceptance our ward gave us. They were reaching out to us right and left and just, "Oh, we feel like we know you so much better. And that's why you've been missing from church services for so long." And about November of this last year, we decided to ask our bishop if my spouse could attend our own ward. And the bishop hesitantly said, okay, we did. And held our breath the whole way through sacrament, and nobody stared, and nobody pointed, and nobody shunned us. It was amazing. It was awesome. Now, I know that there's members of my ward who don't get it. There's members that I don't sometimes understand, but they have been truly, truly perfect examples of how to love one another and just allow somebody to come into church and find the peace that they're desperately seeking, and ask questions if you don't understand. And that has what been the reception we've had. Now, our stake and our ward are still figuring it out, but we present every single Sunday. I come as I am, and my spouse comes as female. And I don't think there's been more than one or two times when it was a work issue that we've missed church. And I love it.
Wow, it's great to hear those stories. And I'm always inspired when I hear leaders took some action to create some space there and was willing to talk. And I love, use the term, you know, everybody's sort of just figuring it out, and nobody's proclaimed they have the answer, or this is what the handbook says and what to do. And speaking of the handbook, I mean, there's just, as I've reviewed it, there's just not a ton of information there when it comes to gender identity. And obviously, you know, just as far as policy goes, right? So how do you reconcile the some of the doctrines? And you said Anne has a testimony that she is a she in the eternities, where you are kind of on the other side of the fence, which is interesting. How do you reconcile, you know, the doctrines, even with the proclamation of the world, it references gender there?
Well, the proclamation references gender is eternal. Nowhere in the proclamation does it assign your gender. You don't go through a checklist and they say, oh, yep, you're male, you're female. So the proclamation just says your gender is eternal. And surprisingly, most members of the transgender community actually find great peace in the proclamation and really love it because it confirms what they've been feeling. I haven't met anyone who doesn't like it. As a spouse, it adds some confusion into my life, but I've never met a member, transgender individual, who didn't believe in the proclamation. As far as doctrine goes and handbook, there's nothing. There's one small line that talks about elective transsexual operation may be cause for disciplinary counsel or disciplinary action. There's no way to decide what's elective for one individual and not for another. I will never be that judge, thank goodness. And also, transsexual operation is not really a term that's used anymore. It's not, most people don't need that. Or if they do, it's not that they're doing a full operation. They're not changing that. Most of them are okay in my situation where my spouse has had no surgical operation. My spouse feels fully able to continue our lives. Now, my spouse does take a hormone replacement therapy dose, just meaning that he takes a little bit of estrogen to kind of regulate the brain. And it's actually found to be really helpful in many cases, and mine included. And my spouse presents every so often as female. And the more and more we present as female, I think the more healing has come. But according to the handbook, there's nothing that says anything against what we're doing. So as a church leader, our bishops are asking us the exact same questions. Well, what does this mean? And what does it lead to? And what is the one day next step? We don't know. We are going to do everything in our power to stay in the church guidelines, stay and live in heart within harmony of the teachings. And for me right now, that means that surgical is the only place that I know I feel black and white. There is potentially a line, but everything else doesn't seem like it would make anyone feel that they don't belong. But a lot of church leaders don't always understand even that.
Yeah. And this is sort of probably a misconception I have as a very much an outsider in this subject. Is everybody that is experiencing gender dysphoria, is their end goal that surgical change? I mean, you would say that that's sort of an outlier, or a lot of people are just happy with the body they have as long as they can present in representing that gender?
Well, they typically aren't happy with the body they have, but they typically are able to cope with the body they have, or some small alteration to the body they have, or way to express on the outside why their body on the inside may not look quite right. But there are a variety of different experiences. And I know very, very dearly, closely to me, there are some people who, in order to make their body and their spirit match as they feel it should be, feel that surgical is something that has to be part of that plan. There's a lot of people who feel that way. I'm not discouraging or shunning them, but there is a large amount of the membership that don't necessarily follow that they need every aspect of the surgical operation. They could have just, some can have a small portion of it. Some can have somewhere, it's not surgical at all. Socially being, we call it a social transition, but socially being recognized as the gender that they feel is correct is enough for many, many members. So it's really important, I think, that a church leader talk about what helps, talk about how they feel, how dysphoric they feel when they're at church and trying to present in the gender on their birth record, because that is very, very difficult and what we call is triggering for almost anyone I've ever met that's transgender. It's really hard to not feel like you should be a man, but yet you're expected to present in a suit and tie every week. And it's a constant reminder. And because so much shame and guilt is associated with a church setting, typically members in our transgender community have the most dysphoria inside the church walls or in a church setting. It is typically the place that they can handle the least. And many of them can't even handle attending church because it's too difficult.
Oh, interesting. So I'm going to, as we talked before we hit record today, I feel like I'm a pretty good person to be asking some of these questions because I'm so outside of this world, not only the same-sex attraction, but especially gender identity. And so if this comes across as being offensive, I do not mean it that way, but where do you draw the line with as far as mental illness is concerned, and just to use an extreme example, if I had a member come in and say, I truly believe I'm a cat, right? I'm going to think, okay, we need some counseling. We need, right? And obviously that's a huge example, an extreme example, but is there a line where this is creeping into, there's just a mental illness happening?
And I think that's the old term for gender identity. It used to be called gender identity disorder. And even, now in the medical records, it's no longer a disorder. It's gender identity dysphoria. It's the feeling that it's not quite right. I'm in no way saying that the Lord per se makes mistakes in how he builds your body. But I will also say that there is what the church has openly accepted, which is an intersex condition, meaning you may have chromosomes of both female and male. You may even have body parts of that appear male on the outside, but your chromosomes on the inside are female. So we know there's some of these variations that occur. How to tell a church leader to handle each one of these, I think, has to be up to that church leader. And they're the ones that hold the priesthood keys for that individual member. But the dialogue, opening up the discussion, is really important and understanding how intense this is for people. Some people in our group truly have these, and I'll use one example specifically. I have a friend of ours, and this person only identified as transgender a couple years ago, but a very, very faithful member, somebody that I would consider, next in line for any leadership calling, a wonderful person. And they were struggling with this to the point where they found comfort in once a week, approximately, dressing in their own privacy of their own bedroom in a little bit more female clothing, and were doing fine. Didn't need to take anything else, had no plans to transition, no plans to leave families, nothing. And that was comforting enough to their soul that they could last the other 6 days of the week and be okay. And because no one really knew about it, it had lasted for some time and been all right. Well, in an effort to renew a temple recommend, this person divulged this to the bishop, just trying to be honest and open with their church leaders. And the church leader didn't know what to say, didn't know what to do, but treated it as a illness, as a sin, as a mistake, and removed this person's temple recommend. So now you have this person whose child is about to turn 12, who is excited for the first time to take their own child to the temple, and now is wrapped with this guilt and shame that something is wrong with them. And yet they're trying to do it the right way. So I don't have the answer as to the clear dialogue. I can tell you that medically, from wonderful psychologists and psychiatrists who obviously have larger paychecks than I, that they recognize this as something that is not chosen. It's something that an individual very frequently can, you could say, is born with or is ingrained in them prior to the time of accountability, prior to eight. And it's just not the same path for everybody. And it's very, very different. I personally feel like in my situation, because we finally identified that this is transgender later in life, and we had already made a commitment for an eternal marriage and of course brought a child into that marriage. I feel like the transgender piece, while it is a mess, a significant impact on our life, it needs to be secondary to our covenants and commitments we made to the Lord, which is why I have been so grateful to find North Star and find resources to just hold on another day and talk about it and answer questions and feel good with where I am with the Lord. I can tell you many times I debated if this meant I needed to leave my marriage. I'm sure so many people who feel face trials do the same thing. And when I went to the Lord and asked for the answer, I was absolutely 100% witness to that my role was to stay. What that means, couldn't tell you. How long that means, couldn't tell you. But I know that the Lord wanted me to stay and stand by my spouse to figure out what this even was. And that's really the reason I'm here. And I, every day that goes forward, as we become more unified in understanding and discussing this, the things that my spouse thought they needed to be happy, originally they thought that they needed every surgery under the books. I mean, you know, some of those can get very, very expensive. And they thought they needed all of that just simply to survive. And then today we're 100% happy and none of those are even on the table. So sometimes just talking about it and putting yourself in a situation of having compassion for the other person, you realize that the Lord wants you first and foremost to stick to what covenants and commitments and you've made with him.
Because ultimately it comes down to the fact that we are first and foremost children of a Heavenly Father who loves us. And human sexuality is so complex, much more complex than most people realize, because we really rather just put everyone in a, you're either male, female, mm-hmm. or you're a freak. And that is just the way it is. And that shouldn't be the way it is, but that's the way it is. I had the most incredible experience last year. Greg and I both had the opportunity to go to a conference in which two LDS transgender individuals were able to tell their story. And I went into that breakout session with incredible fear because I didn't know what I was going to hear. And I think maybe it was the unknown, but I had a good share of my own judgments that I didn't know how to deal with, and I didn't know what I was going to hear. But I trusted Greg, because I was really just following Greg in there. I was stalking Greg. But I sat and listened with an open mind to their stories, and the Lord taught me so much in that experience, because I could feel the Spirit stronger in that presentation than I have ever felt outside the temple. And I walked away a new person with an appreciation for their challenge, in which those of us who have same gender attraction should understand them better than anyone else, because human sexuality is far more complicated than any of us really have understood.
I would just add two things. First, as I and all of us have listened to Bridget and Anne's story, the thing that stood out the most to me is the tremendous faith of them, because this is an area of almost complete, you know, from a doctrinal perspective, just a blank slate. What do I do? There's so many questions that we don't have answers for. We don't know. And yet here are two individuals striving to honor their testimony of the gospel of Jesus Christ and be able to reconcile this part of their lives, this gender identity, with their faith. And to me, it is extremely moving, and I just love them so much. Bridget mentioned in her story that there was a meeting that she attended where a group of transgender individuals and their spouses came, and we had a conversation. And similar to what Joseph described, I was so nervous going to that meeting because I just didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what to say. I wanted to use the right pronouns, and I was just really nervous. it's one of the most spiritual experiences I've ever had in my life, was to just feel the love that God had for every single one of the people sitting in that room. And for that reason, it is a great honor and privilege to be able to work with and serve this amazing community.
Awesome. Well, this has been quite the discussion. What are we missing? Anything? I mean, we could probably go on and on, but yeah, maybe Bridget,
yeah.
give us the basics of for individuals wanting to go to this conference to seek more resources.
So the conference website is conference.northstarlds.org, and they can go there and find the full agenda. They can register there. They can find out information about the venue. It's being held at the Provo Marriott this year. But one of the things I hope they'll do is really look through this agenda. Some of these presenters that have agreed to come and volunteer their time, it's pretty amazing that they are so generous. With Clay Olson, he's going to be coming to talk about Fight the New Drug. Addressing pornography as one of the new drugs that we're facing. And we have gay and Catholic author, which is Eve Tushnet. She's going to come on Friday afternoon and talk about what her experience is to be gay and Catholic in the, to be gay in the Catholic Church, and how so many those similarities cross over into the LDS Church. Just some amazing discussions that we're going to be having. So I encourage you to go to the website and look at that. Right now, we offer registrations for 1 day attendance. You can do it for 2 days attendance. You can do it for the full conference. And we're still offering our normal pricing. It won't increase for another couple weeks. So get on there right away. If you want to go and register for a scholarship or a sponsorship, on that same website, on the registration tab at the bottom, it says apply for a sponsorship. We encourage you to go visit that. Oh, it also next to it has how to register as a church leader and what the definition of church leader is. And so please just go and visit that. If it is something that you know of somebody that could benefit from it, don't be afraid to share it. Don't be afraid to get that word out there. And you're welcome to come, attend, bring a guest. Church leaders also are welcome to bring a guest. They have somebody who they want to help understand more. And just come and have dialogue with us.
Personal experience from the first conference, which was the first conference for North Star 2 years ago. I had just come out to my wife at April General Conference, and we went to that first conference. That conference was in May, the very next month, and our fear was so great that we almost didn't get out of the car. We just almost couldn't pull it off, but we did, and it turned out to be one of the greatest experiences we've ever had as a couple. And imagine a family reunion with a family that you really love, and a really big family, and a mission reunion, and a general conference, the spirit of a general conference all combined, and you never wanting to go home. That's what that 2-day experience was like. We couldn't wait to go the next year. And I couldn't believe that we actually, it was even a better conference than the first year. And I anticipate this one being even better. We're talking about hundreds of people coming to this now. This is not just an experiment. This is now, we have the momentum of a real social movement because we're making a difference.
I would just say, I just want to thank you, Kurt, for the opportunity to be here today and to have this conversation and this dialogue. We truly, obviously, are passionate about this cause and this mission. And for all of you church leaders that are out there, just, we want you to know how much we love you. We want you to know how much we respect you and understand how complicated these issues are. And if there is anything that we can do to help, we want to support you. Just know that and come to the conference.
That concludes my interview with Bridget and with Greg and Joseph as well from North Star. What a wonderful group of people. And I hope you all get a chance to be there at their conference and learn from that and start taking those steps of understanding. Sometimes that's all you can do, is just strive to understand. I hope this is the first 3 parts of many more interviews that we'll be able to do with North Star, and to fully understand as time goes and research progresses and doctrine is further understood, that we can further understand how to love individuals in our ward. And the loving leader is such a powerful leader. As always, I encourage you on over to leadinglds.com/help and consider some ways that you can contribute and help to Leading LDS. It's fun to see the food order reference guide, the consequences stick, just leave my home and go out throughout the world through the mail. And I sure appreciate those that do that. And it helps us move this mission forward and continue to do good and enhance leadership across the world. Until next time, be a leader and not a calling.